Welcome to the last part of this episode of Val Westover, Part 6, Wood-Burning Stoves, Favorite Wood to Burn, and Other Miscellaneous Information. Thank you very much for listening to the Canning Plus 7 podcast. Now let's enjoy the last part of this episode with Val Westover. Let's talk about wooden stoves. What wooden stoves do you like out there? And I personally think it would be good if you could cook over a pellet stove. Now, I say the words pellet stove because they're environmentally friendly. I'm not trying to sound like a tree hugger or any of that, but they are, let's face it. They're environmentally friendly. I like the fact that they generate a whole lot of heat. Don't touch one while those are running. Believe me, I've never done it, but just walking by it scares me on occasion. But can you cook over a pellet stove? And what wooden stove would you recommend, whether it's pellet or not? And what do you think of the pellet stove? Let's just go on that tangent for a while.
Well, I don't have a pellet stove. I do have a wood boiler outside. And the reason I do is because wood stoves are messy. They put soot in the air. Yes. And when you clean them, you haul the firewood in and you haul it out. And my heavens, you know, it's just a mess. And if you open the door to clean your stove, you're going to have soot in the air and your wife's going to be dusting everything and cleaning the windows. I mean, curtains, it's just, it never ends. With a wood stove in the house, the pellet stones, as you said, are a lot cleaner. And I have heard that there are some new ones out that you can cook on. And I haven't seen one, but then that's not in my thing. My thing's an outside boiler and it's totally outside. I don't have the mess inside. I just fill that up with 4 foot long logs and or lumber and shut the door and it heats water in a big jacket. I plumb the water into the house and that's how I heat this monstrosity that I have here with all the people that come and go. And one of the things that I have noticed is, of course, we miss the wood stove heat. There's just nothing quite like sitting next to a wood stove and getting warm if you've been out cold.
Either listening to the nice crackling fire in a fireplace and having good conversations and drinking some good herbal tea or coffee, hot chocolate, whatever.
Yeah, I agree. So I do miss the heat. I do miss the aesthetics, you know, the environment, whatever. There is that. And it's tempting to do about that until I think about the mess. And I don't know, I just have so much to do that if I put one of them in the house, my wife would have me cleaning the walls. You know, I'd be repainting this house every 2 or 3. I don't have the time, okay? But maybe if you had a small room somewhere, a utility room or whatever, we could put a wood stove in there with a little rocking chair and I could go have my wood heat and we could shut the door to the rest of the house when we were playing with the wood stove. That might work, you know, I might get away with that.
Yeah. All right, so let's talk about firewood. What firewood would you recommend to put in your burner? I want to ask you about your boiler real quick. Just your boiler, is it a room that's outside? Is it a separate room? Because I've seen these boilers where you go into a room and the heater is loud. It heats the whole entire building. Now I realize this particular room was built in the 50s, but I remember walking to school. We'd walk in the alley to get to the school that I went to, and that you could hear that boiler clear outside in the alley. Is your boiler the same thing?
No, my boiler is just a firebox. It's surrounded by a water jacket. I think the jacket's like 250 gallon. And you open the door and throw the wood in there, and you can't hear the pump's just a small little circulation pump. You can't hear it running if you're right standing right next to it. It's just a small it's a small thing. Well, it probably does weigh nearly a ton, but you know it's only what 5 feet long and maybe 5 feet tall and 4 feet wide, something like that. and it just sits outside and it's very quiet. It doesn't ask for much other than, and I burn wood, lumber mainly, nails and all. I just throw it in there.
So what wood would you recommend then that burns efficiently? What trees would you recommend chopping down if you're going to collect firewood and those type of things?
Well, of course, the premium is your hardwood, and it's pretty tough to beat maple in the Intermountain West. That's probably one of the highest BTU woods out there, and it burns clean. It burns very hot, and maple doesn't have a whole lot of ash, so you don't have near as much cleaning to do. The softer the wood, like quaking asp and pine, the more ash you're going to clean, the more soot you're going to have to haul out, and they don't burn as hot. So if you get a cheap deal on some lumber yard, you know, and they typically are doing pine, the scraps of wood and pieces of tree that they're going to let you have for hauling off, it's going to be pine. And a lot of people have, that's all they've ever burned, and they're just happy as clams, and it's fine. Pine isn't quite as ashy as quaking asp. Elm is a good choice if you're looking for a clean burning hot wood. Anything hard, popular, cottonwood, they tend to have a little sap in them unless they're really, really dry. So they don't burn quite as clean unless you really get them, you know, 2 or 3 years old minimum on some of those high sappy hardwoods. But maple, of course, is a premium. And
all right,
one thing that I would probably recommend, well, it's for me. I do a lot of my firewood cutting with my 12-inch miter saw and my solar generator. And so when the lumber gets brought in here and they just dump it in a pile, I go up there and I cut it into 4-foot lengths with my miter saw and throw it on the bucket of the tractor and bring it down here and dump it by my boiler. And that works really well. And occasionally, you know, somebody's had some tree limbs or tree pieces that they want cleaned up. And I don't want the big heavy trunk because I got to split it. And that's a lot of work. I want the branches that are like 3 inches up to 6, and I can lift them. They're not too heavy. And if they're 8 foot long, that's great. I take it and put it on my miter saw and flip the switch on my solar generator. And I don't have to stop and sharpen my saw because it's got a carbide blade, and it'll cut all year on that blade, and I won't have to touch it. Nails and all, it just doesn't care. And it's very efficient, low work, and I don't have any splitting to do. So I like that size. And people that are out there cutting those 2-foot trees down and then they fight that to split it, boy, that looks just like a lot of work to me.
Yeah. Okay, one more question, and then I'll let Relay chime in if she wants to. What do you like best about, well, actually, Relay, do you have any questions before I ask the final question?
No, I think you covered pretty much everything that I was wondering about, so thank you.
Okay, and I think I hear you there scribbling notes in the background. That's a good job. Val, what do you like best about being a prepper?
Well, you meet the nicest sort of people. and that's one of the real benefits. You seem to congregate and have interest in people who are doing similar things to you. And they're independent-minded. We can talk politics and religion, and we don't seem to have too much problem that way. You don't have to be too careful.
Might be a problem in Montana. A lot of people do not like religion up here that are preppers, but you could certainly talk politics.
Well, send them down here. I'll work on them a little bit. But anyway, that's kind of a real plus. And of course, the other, I guess there's a big thing here. Freedom.
Yes.
Everybody loves freedom. Well, you can cut it and slice it any way you want to. But the only way to really maintain your freedom is to be independent. And to the degree that you lose your independence, I don't care if it's medical, of insurance, monetary, you can't feed yourself, you can't clothe yourself, you can't stay warm. You lose anything in your ability to take care of your absolute essential needs, and you have lost a piece of freedom. And so independence, that's what a prepper is. It's not something that you do for Armageddon or the day the world stops turning. Prepper is something, it's the way you live. And we live independent. We learn how to take care of ourselves and supply our own needs day to day. The more independent we can become, the more free we will be.
Amen to that. Now, on that note, are you worried about, this is something I have to bring up, are you worried about doing all this prepping and then the government figures out that you're a prepper and they want to take everything away from you? Are you worried about that? Or do you preppers ever get into those discussions? Because I'd imagine this comes up quite often.
Well, you know, I guess we're all worried about them coming and taking our guns. And they would like to redistribute our food. And
yeah, you know, they know where to go, too. They know.
That, I guess they would know where to come, wouldn't they? Howsoever, I think that the real possibility is that there may be some people that are hungry, that have need. And I have extra. And if they're willing to go to work, they won't go hungry or get cold. That's my plan. And if somebody comes and they take it away from me, at least I have the knowledge, because a lot of the stuff that I have didn't just get bought in the store. We made it.
Yeah.
And we can make it again because we're self-reliant, right?
Yes.
We can build it. We can grow it. We can reproduce it. So we just start over. Nothing has really changed. I'd miss my pocket knife, okay, if somebody stole that. And my favorite gun.
Yep.
But, huh? We have learned, being independent, we've learned how to take care of ourselves. And that knowledge, they can't take away.
Yeah. Well, is there anything that you want to add? Anything you want to answer that I had forgotten about?
Well, I don't know where our time is. We didn't talk too much about the contents of the 72-hour kit.
Oh,
let's make that another. Maybe we want to do that later.
Yeah, let's make that another podcast.
Okay.
All right. Do you have anything else you want to add, Relay? I know I gave you a chance once, but.
No, I'm just, so I know you talked about classes and all that kind of stuff. A lot of information has moved online. Are there sites that people can go to look this up that you're aware of, books? Where can people go to learn this information for themselves?
Larry has written 4 books that are educational. The one book is Butterfly Miracles with Herbal Remedies, and all of the formulas that we use here at Butterfly Express and how-to information is in that book. And I do believe that there's an electronic version available online. She also has a book, Butterfly Miracles with Essential Oils. And in that book would be all different kind of ailments and what you would use which one for. And even the blends that she has created, or others, and the different things that are in each one, that's all in that book, with an extensive information on how to effectively use essential oils. Then she has written 2 books on homeopathics. And that's kind of a hard nut to crack, but it's probably the most important of them all.
All right, good. Where do you get those books anyway?
Well, you, like I say, you can go online and Butterfly Miracles, you can look them up, and you can order the, you can order them from Butterfly Express, or you can get the electronic version. They'll email it to you or send it to you how you like, and you can read it that way.
Okay. I assume it's on the Kindle and Apple Book and some of those places.
I don't know about, I don't think PDF, it's on Kindle or Apple, but there is an electronic version available of those books.
Okay. The bottom line is you can order it on Butterfly Express. If you have any questions, give them a call.
There you go. Yeah.
And I,
do you want a phone number? If you have any trouble at all, the front desk is very helpful.
Yes.
They'll answer questions even on, if you're having trouble with an oil or a tincture or whatever. They can even give you a little advice and counsel there, but it's 208-747-3021.
208-747-3021.
Yes, sir. If you're having any trouble finding those books or wanting it done, just give them a phone call and they'll walk you through it, or they'll take your credit card. They love your money and they'll get it right out to you.
All right. Anything else you want to ask, Relay?
So some of the stuff, like the homeopathic stuff, the oils and stuff, are there recipes in the books? Yes. Do you guys have starter kits that people can buy, or is it basically get the recipes and then get your stuff and just follow the directions?
We have all kinds of starter kits with essential oils, and we have kits for people who are having babies at home that have various things in. There are kits for people who are doing foot zoning or doing cranial sacral, massage therapist type stuff. There's small kits and large kits. There is a plethora of different kits available, different bags and sort that come with product in them, depending on what it is that you're focusing on. Emergency kits, wilderness kits, different kind of things that way. The herbal book is very extensive, and rather than labor through the directions on that, you can just go online and watch a quick video on how to make a tincture or how to make a glyceride. And very easy. We thought that the FDA was going to shut down the tinctures and the glycerides some years ago. And so we started making dry herb packs. And the herbs are put together in the combinations that work really well together, and weighed out and put in a Mylar bag and sealed. And so all you have to do to that is just add your alcohol, and a couple of weeks later you can strain it out and you have your tincture. Very affordable. And we went quite extensively on trying to get people to make their own, because we thought that was going to be essential. And that particular thing is growing leaps and bounds. It has really caught on, and people are, in fact, the herbal thing is growing much, much faster than the oils or anything else. People are buying those dry herb packs already made, ready to go, and they can save a lot of money doing that. It's a little bit messy. It's not a lot of fun, but if you're willing to get your hands dirty, you can get right in there, and it's easy to do. And like I say, it makes using the herbs much, much more affordable.
Great. That sounds like some great information. Thank you for sharing that. And I don't know if I missed this while I was taking notes, but do you guys have a website where you have a shop that people can just go and look at stuff?
Yes. Okay. It's butterflyexpress.org.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Yeah. I remember hearing that earlier on. Yeah. Sorry.
By the way, Relay, you're in Salt Lake. Maybe one day you can head over to Clifton, Idaho and visit.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm going to do that at some point.
Yeah, that's not too far away from me, so I thought about that as well. So I would love to come see it.
You're coming, we'll fix you a bite to eat and read to you.
Hey, I love it. Sounds good to me.
Well, anything else that you all want to go over before I end the podcast?
I'm good.
All right. If you don't mind, stay with me here just for a few minutes after the podcast, and I will talk to you later, folks. Thank you for listening to part 6 of this episode of the Canning Plus 7 podcast with Val Westover, discussing wood-burning stoves, favorite wood to burn, and other miscellaneous information. Don't forget, you can listen to this whole podcast in its entirety if you would like. Stay tuned for another edition of the Canning Plus 7 podcast.